Live and Lansing with Michael Cohen. This is More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
And we're back. Michael Cohen, it is a really beautiful Friday evening here in Lansing. Hope you're enjoying it. It is just about to turn 6:35. And now, did you know that 40% of what we talk about every day is ourselves, telling others how we think and feel? And, you know, scientists are now finding that there's a powerful neurological reason why people just love to talk about themselves. It's something that Harvard neuroscientist Diana Tamir has been studying, and her research is now making national news. She joins me now. Diana, thanks for taking some time to join us here on 1320 WILS.
No problem.
So this isn't just talking, right? We're talking about Facebooking, tweeting, anything involving self-disclosure. Your finding is that it's apparently triggering some kind of fairly strong response in the brain. What are we talking about?
Yeah, so what our experiment was looking at was whether or not engaging in self-disclosure or answering questions about yourself and sharing those answers with somebody else would engage neural regions that neuroscientists have identified as processing rewards. And it turns out that they do. So when people have the opportunity to share information about themselves with other people, they seem to feel subjectively rewarded.
Now, the reward is as powerful as money, food, and sex?
Well, we can't really compare it across the different types of rewards. We only had our participants doing one of those things. We didn't scan them while they were eating or getting money. Well, we actually did scan them while they're getting money, but they were not having sex in the scanner. So we can't compare across those, but we can say that the same neural networks that are engaged during the receipt and anticipation of all sorts of types of rewards likewise respond during self-disclosure.
Now, there are all kinds of people, certainly people that love to talk about themselves, and those that don't, that seem to be very private. They prefer never to talk about how they feel about things. Were you seeing different responses from these kinds of different characteristics, or was it universally the same?
Yeah, we didn't see any differences between, say, introverts and extroverts about how much they valued or how rewarding they found self-disclosure. My guess is that there's definitely some individual difference that drives excessive versus not so excessive self-disclosure. We don't know what it is yet. But I think across all humans, whether or not you're shy or you're really extroverted, everybody likes to feel socially connected with somebody. Some people may just, seek that out a little bit more robustly than others.
I'm talking to Harvard neuroscientist Diana Tamir about her new study regarding the neurological effects of self-disclosing and the pleasurable effect of doing that. Now, Diana, was there a distinction, though, between simply talking to somebody and sharing ideas in general and specifically talking about ourselves?
Yeah, so we compared people answering questions about themselves to answering questions about facts or answering questions about somebody else, so Barack Obama, for example. And people would forego money in order to, share their opinion about Barack Obama, but they forewent more money in order to answer questions about themselves. We also found that when people had the opportunity to answer a question privately, so without an audience for their answer, as compared to answering a question with an audience, so where they had the opportunity to share their answer, sharing engendered more reward than keeping something private, regardless of whether they were answering questions about themselves or answering questions about somebody else.
So when a wife tells her husband, "You're not listening to me," there's a reason for that. For her unhappiness about that. So you're saying ultimately getting some kind of a feedback response from someone acknowledging that there is active listening occurring, that is a key to, I guess, maximizing the effect of talking about yourself?
Well, in our studies, there was no feedback. People just had to believe that there was somebody on the receiving end. We know that people will, share their opinions and thoughts with their pets or send their wishes and prayers up to God. There's not necessarily any direct response from a pet or from a religious figure when people are engaged in that type of self-disclosure, but we know that people are motivated to do that. And I think the key feature is that people know that there's a receptive audience out there on the other end.
You may have heard the phrase, you know, hey, I'm tired of talking about myself. Why don't you talk about me for a while? Is it very likely that people love to hear others talking about them just as much as they enjoy talking about themselves?
My guess is yes. I don't have any data to speak to that just yet, but I do think people would prefer to hear information about themselves than any other random old fact out there.
Is this the first time you're doing this kind of research on this dynamic? I'm guessing there's been some sense of the reason why people seem to talk about themselves so much.
Yeah, there's been a long line of literature on self-disclosure. People have looked at kind of the health consequences to not sharing. It turns out that if you keep emotional experiences kind of pent up inside, that has negative health consequences. People have shown that self-disclosure engenders liking between the people who are listening and sharing the information. So there's a lot of kind of more high-level research looking at the effects of self-disclosure. This is kind of taking it a few levels lower than that and looking at the most basic motivation for self-disclosure, which happens to be subjective feelings of reward.
Well, what about listening? I'm guessing listening to somebody talk about whatever it is they want to talk about doesn't provide the same pleasurable effect, does it?
We've run a study subsequent to the ones that were recently published, which looked at kind of the other end of self-disclosure, which is receiving information about somebody else. And what we found is that people do indeed enjoy more receiving information about a person than receiving information, say, about facts. People also enjoy receiving that information more if they've actually solicited it from that person. So if they've asked specifically for the information from the person, that seems to be more valuable an experience than just receiving information from the person. So I think this reciprocity, the give and take, is a really important feature of self-disclosure. It's part of what the larger picture of how the self-disclosure behavior fits into how humans are social creatures.
So in terms of the reward function of self-disclosing, you're saying at this point that there's no kind of sense of how it compares to other rewards that humans perceive, such as food.
Yeah, we didn't, in order to answer the question of, you know, whether or not self-disclosure is more or less rewarding than any of the others, other types of reward, we have to directly compare them, and we just didn't do that in this study. I think you could ask people, do you enjoy more, sharing information about yourself on Facebook or having sex? I think people would be able to answer that question pretty easily. In terms of monetary value, we were able to quantify kind of the ability or the opportunity to share one little tidbit of banal information about yourself. In terms of money, turns out it's about a penny's worth to share your thoughts with somebody else.
I see, because your study did involve offering money to talk about subjects other than the person themselves, and then people were actually choosing to forego the money many times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People like being able to share information with other people. People just like sharing information about themselves even more if they have an audience for that.
Where does this kind of research lead? I'm guessing there's some commercial interest in knowing this. You can certainly manipulate somebody by knowing they enjoy talking about themselves and trying to provoke them to continue to do that. But in terms of your research in this area, where do you go next?
We're interested in the larger social consequences of this behavior. So in particular, we're interested in seeing, we know that, for example, self-disclosing to somebody makes you like that person more. It makes that person like you more. We're interested in what the consequences of this behavior are. So will you be more egocentric when you're thinking about this other person, or will you be more altruistic when you're thinking about this person after you've self-disclosed to them?
No kidding. So yeah, you're finding that people like those that are more self-disclosing in general?
Yeah, this is research that they said for a while, people have shown that the if you self-disclose to somebody, you're more likely to self-disclose to people that you like. People are more likely they like you if you self-disclose to them. What's also important, though, is that the level of self-disclosure between the two parties is relatively equivalent. So we don't want someone who's, you know, sharing way too much information and somebody who's not sharing any information. That kind of imbalances.
Right. Indeed. Ask some questions sometimes, right? That's probably some good advice. Harvard neuroscientist Diana Tamir. Diana, interesting research. I'm sure there's going to be a lot more coming. Thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Sure, my pleasure.
And we're coming right back to talk about money and how you can make some. We'll be joined by someone who was in deep credit card debt, and then he turned it all around. $32,000 of credit card debt actually came right out of it. He's got some words of wisdom. We'll share it next. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS.